You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. James H. Brown and Associates, Alberta Injury Lawyers. Go to jameshbrown.com.
Okay. Good start for the Calgary Flames. My goodness, they're up 3-0 on the Panthers with about 7 minutes left in the first period. Dubé, Huberto, Anderson with the goals there in overtime. Hurricanes and Penguins are 2-2. Gensel tied it at 19:02 of the third. Sharks have beaten the Canadiens 4-0. Canadiens are here on Saturday to play the Oilers. Late in the third, looks like Boston's going to win again. 3-1 lead on the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're going to go to 19-3. Early in the third, Flyers leading the Islanders 2-1. Predators up 1-0 on the Ducks. That's late in the second. Middle of the second, Jets 2, Avalanche 0. Wheeler and Morrissey are the goals. Scores later. Caps at Van Tentacle team will try to commit a little regicide in Los Angeles. World Cup scores: Senegal 2, Ecuador 1, Netherlands 2, Qatar 0, England 3, Wales 0. Pardon me, not 0, nil, and USA 1-0 over Iran. You gotta say nil, and it's not a game; it's a match. And it's not a tie, it's a draw. I believe that's the soccer lingo. No one's corrected me on that yet anyway. Oilers quick skate today for some of the guys, and then they flew to Chicago. Tomorrow, our coverage on 6:30, Ched. We'll start with the face-off show at 6. The game is at 7:30, so it's a late one in Chicago. That's 8:30 Central Time. And don't forget, Bob Stauffer will have Oilers Now from noon to 2. Of course, so many captivating stories out of the World Cup, even though we know now that Canada is not going to advance. For her perspective, an Olympic gold medalist with the women's team and just an outstanding player during her tenure with the women's national team, Steph Labbe checking in tonight. Steph, welcome back to Inside Sports. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Great for having me.
Well, it's always nice to talk to you. It's a pleasure to catch up. Just before we dive into some World Cup stuff or other storylines, let everybody know what you're up to these days.
Oof, what am I up to? I'm currently, general manager for the Vancouver Whitecaps women's program. It's been a big challenge for me, but it's been one that I've, been up for, and it's been a really exciting time, being able to finally be in a position where all of the things I've been talking about and fighting for, with the women's national team and fighting for women's soccer in this country, to be now working for one of the most historical clubs in this country, and to have the support of them and, taking all of those words and really putting it into action. It's a really amazing feeling, and I feel so lucky to be able to be doing what I'm doing.
So if I would have told you at any point in your playing career that you would go into management, would have you said, yeah, that makes sense? Or was that never even on your radar as something you do after you finished playing?
Yeah, probably would have said you're crazy. wasn't necessarily something that was, at the front of my mind. But at the same time, I didn't necessarily have a clear picture of what I wanted to do. I always knew I wanted to stay in the game. I wanted to stay involved. A new coaching wasn't necessarily like what was going to get me out of bed every single day. I enjoy it, but I didn't think that was a long-term thing. So I knew I wanted to kind of, stay in the game, still stay close enough where I can, affect players, create good culture, fight for the game in this country. So it's really a perfect blend of that where I, still have that impact on players and have that ability to connect with them and create positive environments, but also be able to push the game forward from a bigger level.
Yeah. Well, good for you for doing that. I personally, I'm not surprised you're doing that because you've always shown a lot of leadership and a lot of drive to do new things. So that's pretty cool. To change gears just a little bit, the World Cup, obviously a huge story right now. I'm just going to ask you this. What do you think of the F Croatia stuff? you had Herdman as a coach. Did that surprise you? Do you feel it's overblown? Just tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me. You know, everything is obviously speculation. We don't know what's going on there. My biggest thing is, you know, I think you could tell in that interview, number one, that John was passionate. He was motivated. I think coming out of that Belgium game, like the team and I think all of Canada really had this true, honest sense of we can be here. You know, we're not just here. We're competing. We're, you know, playing one of the best teams in the world off of the park, dominating, creating all these chances. So I think there was this deep belief, not only in, you know, all of us as fans, but also in John that, hey, if we can, you know, do this against Belgium, like bring on who's next, you know. And I don't think it really mattered who was next. In their minds, they knew they lost this game. They had to get a result. So John's a motivator. I think he, you know, in the moment, got caught in the moment in terms of the excitement, the pride and the, yeah, I think the confidence of how they performed in that game and thought, hey, if we go out and perform just like that against, you know, another top team, hopefully we can put in another brilliant performance like that and actually get a result this time. So I think it was a mix of that. You know, maybe the words he chose weren't, you know, perfect, but we've all said things in the heat of the moment that we don't necessarily, you know, mean specifically. But yeah, so I think it has been blown out. You know, at the end of the day, that's not why we lost 4-1 to Croatia. But you know, it's heat of the moment. We get excited. We're back in our team and things like that happen.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, obviously you're a fan as well as being someone who's incredibly knowledgeable about it. You know, Morocco is still to come. We're not going to make the second round. Should we be disappointed? Should there still be pride that this was, you know, a learning experience and ultimately a step forward for the men's? Maybe you haven't processed this yet because we don't know what's going to happen against Morocco, but we know we're not going to make the second round. But you know where I'm going? Like, it's a bummer that we're already out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And to be honest, like being on the other side of it, you know, being on the women's team and playing in those games where, you know, we already know that we're through, or, you know, we know that we still have something to play for, and you're playing against a team that's already out. Sometimes those are the toughest games because those teams have nothing to lose. They're ready to throw everything at you and come out. And they really have, like I said, yeah, nothing to lose in that game. So I think for the Canadians, they have nothing to lose. They can go out. They can be confident in the performances they've had. And, you know, they're still chasing history. You know, they've been talking about it and it's a clear thing. We've got that goal now and they want to go out and get a result, you know, whether it's a tie or a win, like they want that result. They've never gotten that. And anytime you get to step on the field, number one, representing your country, but in a World Cup, anytime you get to do that, it's an honor. And so I would be extremely disappointed if they didn't go out and try to get a result in the game and give everything that they have. I'd be disappointed in that. So from what I know of John, he's going to be motivating them to the end of the earth to go out and put in another proud performance to leave this World Cup on a positive note and to leave it on a high, to leave it on, you know, some good memories that they can take away with them and build on for the next 4 years.
Can you shed some light for me? Because I mean, you played in several tournaments with this format, right? Like it's still a relatively short tournament as opposed to a, you know, 30, 40 game league season. Like you have to approach it with a different mentality because there can be, it can change fast for teams, right? There can be all this optimism, and then 5 days later, it's like, oh man, we're in trouble here. Like, what's it like to go through a tournament with that pace as a player?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and it's even shorter when you lose the first two games, you know? You know,
right.
It feels a lot shorter in that sense. But anytime you go into a tournament, the roller coaster of emotions is there. Like, you know, you can go from extreme highs to extreme lows and you have to recover quick. And the best teams are the most consistent teams. Teams that get through these major tournaments are the ones that are consistent and that build off of every single performance and keep getting better. They're not necessarily the best in game one, but they're the best in game seven. And I think that's what, you know, when we see the other teams building throughout this tournament, we're going to see every team's going to face adversity in one way or another. But it's those teams that remain consistent and that continue to build off of performances that are going to make it. And so it is a different mindset. So you don't have, you know, a week between games where you're working on one thing and then you kind of learn from that game, you move on to the next. Like you really have to be able to learn as quick as you can, bounce back and get ready for that next game. And there's no time to dwell. There's no time to think about the mistakes we've made. No time to think about, you know, should have, could have, would have. You've got to keep moving on and keep looking forward and look at what the next task is and what can you get out of that next game.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more, Steph. Steph Labbe joining us tonight, Inside Sports. So when James Duthie on TSN was talking with his panelists, and he said the Alphonso Davies goal is the biggest moment in Canadian soccer history, and then he said to Janine Becky, pardon me, biggest moment in Canadian men's soccer history. Like, does that need to be qualified every time? Is it just assumed we're separating the two genders? Like, are you sitting there thinking like, okay, you should always talk about the success of the women's team, or like, you know what I mean? Like, where are you with all that? Because you guys blazed the trail, and I think you got a lot of people interested in international soccer because of your success over the last 15, 20 years, right?
Yeah, I think I've said this before, everyone makes mistakes. I truly believe that. At the same time, this isn't something new, unfortunately, in our country. Like, there's been constant reminders of the inequality between the men's and women's program. There's been constant reminders of what we value more in this country. And I think the women have been, just because we're fighting for equality and equity, just because we're fighting for equal representation and equal media and, you know, an equal voice and things, it doesn't mean we don't want the success of the men's team. So these comments are a constant, push down to the women's program, and then they're a constant, it's very hard for us to hear them because they happen over and over and over and over. So yes, this is a specific situation where we're in a men's World Cup. We're talking about the men's World Cup. Everything is kind of revolved around the men's game. So we make these comments without thinking about it. And if it was a one-off, you know, we wouldn't be talking about it, but it's the fact that these comments happen all the time. It's the fact that, you know, we talk about Ronaldo being the greatest scorer, you know, of all time without even talking about, you know, Sinclair being the greatest scorer in all of international football. Like, there's these things that we are constantly being brought up and constantly fighting for. And I think the narrative that comes out of this is every time the women speak up about this, there's this narrative that we don't support the men, or we're jealous of what the men get, or, you know, we don't think the men should be getting what they get. And that's completely false. Like, for me, I want the men to have all of the representation that they're getting. I want the men to be paid what they should be paid. I want the men to have, you know, the places in the media that they are getting, if not more. But I just want the women to have that equal as well. Like the women, we've scored multiple goals in World Cups. I don't even know how many to count. We've won games in World Cups. We've gotten out of the group in World Cups. We've won knockout games in World Cups. We've been in semifinals of World Cups. Like, the women have done this consistently. We've been in the last, I don't even know how many World Cups straight, you know, last seven World Cups straight, whatever it is. We've won 3 Olympic medals. Like, the women have done all these things. So every time something that the men do, when they hit these small milestones and we say it's the greatest thing that's ever happened in Canada, yeah, it's a disappointment, and it's infuriating as a female player to know what we've done and the credit isn't there, you know. And I brought up this point before, you know, in the 24 hours leading into the first game of the Men's World Cup, you know, on the Canada Soccer Instagram, there's 20 posts in 24 hours leading into that first game. Leading into our first game in Tokyo, there was 5. So it's not that we don't want the men getting this. We just expect the same thing for the women. So I think for me, the more that we're fighting and the more that we're hearing these comments, I just hope that, you know, the Women's World Cup is in 8 months, and I expect everything that we've been giving to the men, everything that the men have seen in this lead up to this, the women get the exact same thing in the lead up to their World Cup.
Steph, as always, I appreciate your perspective. I appreciate your passion for soccer and for Canadian soccer. And you're always welcome on this program. Continued success here on your journey with the Whitecaps. And let's talk again soon, okay? This was great.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins is brought to you by James H. Brown and Associates, Alberta Injury Lawyers, the heavy hitters of injury law.
So news today that was initially reported by a member of the 630 Chet Sports Department that the University of Alberta will host women's basketball nationals in 2024. First time the tournament in Edmonton since 2001. Pandas head coach is Scott Edwards. Scott, great to talk to you again. How are things?
They're really good today, Reed, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome news. I know this is obviously going to happen next spring, but just the significance of the U of A being named the host of the National Basketball Tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be huge for our institution, for the city, for youth basketball, I think, and all the exciting things that we hopefully are going to be able to put on during that week of the tournament. And it's just nice to have this much lead time, right? We got about 16 months before the tournament's here in the city, and that gives us plenty of time to think about the vision we have for the event and then how we can make it a great experience for everyone involved.
What about the and the men's tournament was just here, I guess, a few months ago, and now the women's tournament is coming. What about the benefits or just the Saville Centre and why it's a great site for hosting the Nationals?
Yeah, if anyone was able to be out at the Saville last spring to watch the men's tournament, they would have got a glimpse of it. It was just a phenomenal venue. I mean, it's great sight lines in there. It's big enough to host this tournament and really pack that place. It's a very loud venue. It's a lot of fun to play in when it's full. And just the space that we have in that building allows every team that's competing at the tournament, you know, to get enough court time. You're not worried about trying to fit eight teams into one court to practice. There's a lot of space in there and team rooms and things. And so it's a great venue. It's going to be fun to be able to showcase it to the rest of the country as well.
Okay. Does this change anything for you recruiting-wise?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big part of finally being allowed to tell the athletes we've been talking to and then, you know, those new ones that we got to go out and search for, that this is going to be an opportunity for them to play in the national championship, guaranteed on their home floor. Just an exciting time, and we're looking forward to being able to talk about that with the next up-and-comers.
Okay. In terms of this year's team, I was just double-checking the standings. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you're 5-1. As people probably know, I used to do the play-by-play for you guys. It's been a long time since I did that, but usually Alberta was at or near the top of the standings. But does Canada West remain extremely competitive? I mean, I always remember that one year I was doing the games, and the top 10 had six Canada West teams. Slightly unusual, but there's often four. Yeah. Does Canada West women's basketball remain that competitive and sort of top heavy?
I think it is this year. I think there is probably eight teams that could comfortably sit there and talk about legitimately winning the conference title this year. And I mean, there's a bit of separation. We've got a couple of the number one ranked team in the country, Regina, right now, and Fraser Valley's in the top five, and Saskatchewan's always very good, and Calgary's been very good. And so there's a number of teams in this conference that could say they could win it, and including, you know, the team we're going to go play this weekend. UBC's got a great team, so. Exciting times. I think there's been a few years where we get back to that sort of parity that you remember from your days on the mic, that that the conference is top heavy right now, and it's kind of exciting to be a part of.
The conference is big. Do you play everybody, or is it you can't do a complete sort of round robin or double round robin over the course of the regular season?
Yeah, 17 teams in the league now, so it's a little difficult. We get 11 out of the 17 every year, and there's six we don't see, and so I try to use some of our non-conference to play those six every year.
Oh, okay. So you still might see them, but just not in. Do they designate a rival that you will always play?
Yeah, we're in pods of four. And so there's, for us, it's University of Saskatchewan, University of Calgary, and McEwen. And that's our kind of rival game. So we are guaranteed to play them every year. And then after that, it's different pods from different parts of the conference. And you're right, it's so geographically large and just numbers of teams, it's the biggest in the country.
How long have you been coaching the Pandas now?
17th season this year.
You're up to your 17th, but I'm going to guess, just going off my memory, you're probably not the longest serving coach in the conference.
No, I'm not.
That's amazing, though, and that's why it's so competitive, right?
Yeah, exactly. You have a lot of stability at the top of programs. I think that at U of A specifically, we've done a great job of maintaining and retaining coaches, and I think that's been one of the secrets to the whole athletic program success, is just continuity year to year. And in women's basketball, it seems to be a big deal, and so those teams that are always at the top, typically the coaches have been there for quite a while.
All right, so with some of these coaches that you go against – you know, 2 to 4 times a season. Like, are there any secrets anymore? Or, like, do you ever look over and be like, okay, I know what you're calling now. Like, come on.
Yeah, not a lot for the ones that I've been coaching against for a while. And same for me, right? So you have to be very crafty with those ones that know you very well. So it adds another layer to the whole preparation each week.
Okay, are you home or away this weekend?
We're out at UBC this weekend, so it's going to be a good end of this semester test for us to play the Thunderbirds.
Okay, awesome. Well, yeah, all the best this weekend. I don't think it's too early. I'll wish you a Merry Christmas.
You too.
Okay, yeah, congratulations on U of A getting national, Scott. That's awesome.
I appreciate it. Hopefully we can see lots of Edmontonians out to watch that tournament. It's going to be a great one.
Right on. That is Scott Edwards. Love talking to him, head coach of the U of A Pandas basketball team. And the U of A will host the Women's National Tournament. That is in 2024, but they announce it today. I got a lot of time for Scott Edwards. Well, I got a lot of time for U of A basketball, but I got to know Scott quite a bit when I used to call the games. He's an outstanding, outstanding coach. All right. Just quickly before we go, I want to update a couple of games. The Bruins do win 3-1, so they continue to cruise. The Hurricanes got an overtime win against the Penguins. Flames are up 3-0 on the Panthers after the first. Jets up 3-0 on the Avs after two. 6 o'clock faceoff show tomorrow. Game at 7:30. Oilers at Blackhawks. Thanks to Dave Campbell. He's the producer of Inside Sports. And to Kellen Kennedy. He is your studio producer. My name's Reed. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.